To quote the great Rod Stewart in his hit single titled Tonight's the Night. Tonight is when college basketball begins. We have the Champions Classic, as we do every year to kick off the season. Tonight, Kansas, Michigan State, Duke, Kentucky. We have some local flavor tonight as well with Belmont and Ohio. A lot to get into on our first game night edition of Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic. My name is Elijah Campbell alongside my partner in crime, Michelle Knezovic, who we went together to a Belmont basketball practice this week, speaking of the Bruins, and we're going to dive into that game and more. Michelle, as a Kentucky grad, your team's part of the Champions Classic tonight, the biggest story in college basketball, of course, the celebration of the season beginning. How did you wake up feeling? How you feeling right now? What's your best and worst case scenario just off the top of your head?
I've been a nervous wreck all day, Elijah.
Oh, man.
Everyone, I know my Twitter mentions are going to go crazy because I have been talking. I've been hyping this team up. When it comes to Kentucky, I am a homer through and through. I'm so nervous. I think the first game of the year, I never know what to expect, especially this year. I haven't been covering them really in the offseason. We're in Nashville. And this is the opening night, right? We get our first appearance of these big time teams. And I'm prepared to get a lot of hate.
Okay.
And hear a lot of this team's awful, blah, blah, blah. And it just gets me so heated because I'm kind of all over the place. I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm a little scared because I told Robbie and Rex Road this morning that we're going to beat Duke by 20.
You talked it up. Yeah, you really talked it up this week.
So yeah, kind of all of the above, every emotion in the book, but more than anything, just so excited. This is a non-COVID year, you know, Madison Square Garden. I've already seen videos and pictures from friends who work up in New York and they're at the event and it really just looks awesome. The Kentucky basketball team, they went to the Knicks game the other night, saw some of their former teammates. Just really exciting. Just really exciting last dance for Coach K. You've got Michigan State, Kansas, Kentucky. It's always such a great start to basketball season.
I like the role you've embraced here as like the designated Kentucky homer, if you will. It's that is a good role to play because I grew up a Kentucky basketball hater. Growing up a Tennessee Vols fan, I absolutely despise the University of Kentucky. And then of course, like that's the most polarizing team around here if you think about it, because obviously when the SEC tournament is here, almost every March, it won't be this year, but it will be for like the next 8 or so after that, Nashville becomes Lexington South. I mean, it is a big blue takeover around here in those parts. So Kentucky is a very polarizing and popular team around here. I feel like you either love them or you hate them. So you being the Kentucky grad and the Kentucky fan is going to play a really fun role on this show all year long. And of course we'll get into Kentucky and Duke, like the nitty gritty of the matchup here in a little bit, which I'm really excited to do. But like I mentioned earlier, we'll go from Cats to Bears. And by Bears, I mean Bruins. We went to see a Belmont practice last week, later in the week, as they were preparing for tonight's game against Ohio, which is a really big game. A lot of implications in terms of their work in the non-conference schedule and building a resume come March. Michelle, I'll go ahead and ask you, what were your initial takeaways of watching this team practice, getting to see this team in person, be on the floor with them? What stuck out to you about them?
So, Elijah, the first moment I got to the gym, right, I got there a little bit early, a little bit before practice started, and what I noticed right off the bat was just the immediate camaraderie among the team. I had interviewed a bunch of the players, you know, throughout the season. I got to know a lot of them, big personalities on the team. But as soon as Coach Alexander walked out there, they're all in a line. You know, when it comes to warming up, all warming up in sync, all doing things together. When it came to the drills, everybody knew what they were doing. They looked like a unit. I went to the Belmont men's basketball luncheon a couple weeks ago. Casey Alexander spoke, and the reporter asked him and said, if you could describe your team with one word, what would it be? And he described his team as together. So I had that word in my head before he came to practice. And I feel like that was the perfect word to describe them. As soon as I got there, their team looked like such a unit, whether it be doing drills. They were just on their T's and P's. What's the saying?
I think it's P's and Q's, but I'm not 100% sure on that either. Like some of the Southern idioms are still over my head, but yeah, but like, I know what you're saying though, because I definitely saw something similar. They were on their
X's and O's. And Q's. They were just on their stuff.
Insert letters that? Here. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. I think a couple of standouts to me, obviously Ben Shepherd, he looked extremely athletic. I looked at some of his tape from last year and just effortlessly scoring in these small scrimmages they were having. We talked to Casey. He said that they track their stats all over the summer, you know, how so they can keep a tallying roll. And they said that he clearly was the second player. Obviously, you had Nick Musinski, who was first. They're going to score a lot of points in the paint. I mean, the guy's 6'11", so – if you're not utilizing that, he's not your top scorer. You got a problem with that. Ben Shepherd was a great standout for me. Really loved seeing him play in action. I had seen him do drills before, but really seeing him. Also, I think another takeaway was you could see that, I mean, we know this is a veteran team. They've all, a bunch of them have played together. They only have two freshmen on the team. They were confident and they trusted each other. You saw a lot of like no look passes, anticipating somebody being under the rim for a shot, just really look together, which is, you don't see that a lot from teams, especially preseason, especially for the first game of the year. We're expected to see teams not looking prepared. Whereas I walked into this practice thinking, oh, wow, they actually look pretty good. And when we asked coach, he said, yeah, I feel like we didn't take a drop in the off season. We were able to really just build on that and keep moving upward.
Yeah. Oh, I saw the same thing too.
A little Elijah.
I saw the same thing too. And when you talk to Coach Alexander about it, he definitely mentions that you don't have like this learning curve that every other team kind of has to go through to begin a season, where you have to get used to another player's playing style. Grayson Murphy is a point guard who can control and dictate the pace of a game. Sometimes for a player coming out of high school, or for a freshman's going to be playing, you know, a vital role in a lineup, it takes some time to get used to that speed, that cadence. Learning an offense, a new college offense, can be difficult, especially if you're bringing in a bunch of different new guys. It's the same challenge that Kentucky's going to be facing, Duke's going to be facing, Texas is going to be facing. And despite all the talent you have, you're going to be prone to slow starts because there's that learning curve that you have to have. And this team can completely bypass that because minus maybe one or two losses from last year, they bring the entire lineup back. They're one of, I think, five or six teams in college basketball that returns their entire starting lineup from a year before. And the thing that I noticed, too, is the biggest sign of a mature team is one where when they're playing in practice, whether it be a drill or five-on-five or shooting drills, is everybody's talking. There's a lot of communication. That was the thing that stood out to me the most was defensively, everyone's talking. They're talking about where the screens are. If your heads are playing high, they have, you know, a very good established verbiage of, you know, being able to say one thing and being able to make that happen on the court as well. They communicate so well to the point where there's not a moment where they're not talking or they're not helping each other out. It's a good sign of leadership. And I've been at college basketball practices where you can hear a pin drop during 5-on-5. And even those coaches and those in said practices that I have mentioned will get on to players and said, why isn't anybody talking? You need to be able to communicate to get around these screens. The biggest weapon you have as a defense against maybe a pick and roll is communication. And you don't have to coach that. Casey Alexander does not have to coach that with this team. They're incredibly mature.
Elijah, we also noticed the communication specifically with Luke Smith. Right, he's a fifth year on the team. I interviewed him earlier this year, and he told me that he wants to eventually be a coach. And we just found out earlier this week that he is going to be the coach for Knoxville Catholic in 2022-23. And I think in addition to the communication on the court that we saw, he was asking questions. Coach Alexander said something. He was making sure that everybody knew exactly what coach was talking about. He was clarifying. He was saying, hey, coach, can you explain that one more time? Hey, coach, can you elaborate on what you want us to do? So that everybody was on the same page. In addition, when they were in their huddles, when they were doing their scrimmages, right, blue versus white, he was taking some of the freshmen saying, hey, like, do this. I also saw Jacoby take Will under his arm and say, hey, like, don't worry about this, and was like explaining something to him. And that is what you need, especially when you have two young guys who are transitioning into a veteran team. They didn't look like they didn't know what was going on. They looked like they really transitioned nicely. And if we were to walk into that gym and not know who the freshmen were, I don't think they wouldn't stand out.
Mm-mm. Oh, my favorite thing about the freshman, Will Richard, that kid has a shooting stroke. We were watching the shooting drills, and I don't think he missed a corner three for like 5 minutes. I mean, these Belmont offenses in the last decade have been predicated on great two-point shooting and great three-point shooting, a team that is always in the top, you know, 1 or 2 percentile in college basketball in effective field goal shooting and true shooting percentages. And, I mean, he's a sniper. I can see him getting on the floor because of the way he's able to shoot the rock. It's awfully impressive. And that'll go ahead and take us, you know, to tonight's game, a big one against Ohio. I'll go ahead and ask for your initial thoughts on that game. You know, Ohio, a team that was in the NCAA tournament last year and won a game, beat Virginia, made it to the second round of the big dance. No Jason Preston this year, but they essentially return every starter not named Jason Preston. It's just a hard void for them to have to replace, considering he was like 10th in the entire country in assist rate and averaged 7 assists per game on the year, which is one of the highest totals in the country.
Yeah, Elijah, this game actually, I think, has been one of the more intriguing ones that we're going to see tonight. Obviously, outside of the Champions Classic, like you said, Ohio, they're an NCAA double tournament team is what I was just
Double NCAA. Is when they play two games. Yeah, they play two games in it. So, yeah, there's a connection.
NCAA tournament team, you know, it's in Ohio, right? Mm-hmm. Belmont, they're back on the road. They're traveling.
True road game.
And yet, it's a road game. I think we saw earlier today that Belmont's favored by 4 points. But here's the thing. I think it's going to be a dog battle throughout the entire game. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really close game. I think we're going to see a lot of shooting, you know, a lot of points in the paint, especially on Belmont's side. But here's the but. We saw how great they looked in practice. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're comfortable in that gym, right? They're comfortable here in Nashville. They're comfortable at the curb. It's always really interesting to see a team in practice and then to see them actually perform for the first time of the season. There's a lot of hype surrounding this team. You know, they've made top 25 polls. They're returning practically their whole team. They're expected to do really well. Mm-hmm. Can they handle this pressure going in there? Can they make the shots? Can they make the plays? Are they going to be frazzled out there? I don't think they will be. You know, they have a veteran team, but it's the first game of the season. So that's the big question mark I have. If they perform how we said they performed in practice, how they looked, if they make their shots and they're making their plays, I think they can win this game.
Oh, yeah.
But I think they clearly are the favorite over Ohio. I mean, I think Ohio's got a good team, a solid roster. They're returning their starting lineup as well. But what I saw from Belmont, they're a favorite in my mind. I think that they could easily win if they, you know, make their shots and stuff. But if they come out confident, I don't think they'll have a problem. But that's what we need to see.
Yeah, I think Belmont scouted really well for this game, too. And, of course, we can't divulge everything we heard in that practice on this show because of the scouting. But, I mean, there's a lot of attention to detail that the Bruins have taken in those practices to apply to this game, too. Ohio loves to play in space. You saw Belmont when we were there practicing, you know, ways to play this team out in the open, you know, with the shot clock winding down. Like, they know the type of game that Ohio's going to give them. But the biggest thing to me, too, what makes this game so significant is that I can see Ohio being a team that ranks wins in the 75 to 100 range in net ranking towards the end of the year. And as a true road game, this could potentially be a high-end quad two win or a low-end quad one win. And that's how you're judged at the end of the year when it comes to matching resumes on Bubble Talk. Like, that's how these teams are going to be judged all season long. And if you're able to get a true road win against a team that's going to hang out in the 75 to 100 range, because I think this is going to be one of the better teams in the MAC, Ohio is, barring some kind of, you know, incredible letdown, a win tonight, especially if they're able to put some style points on it, will bode really, really well. Now, with them being four-point favorites, that is a tough ask. I think I would still take Belmont -4. But I think it will be about a 1 or 2 possession game just because they are very similar in terms of the style that they want to play. And both of these teams have the same objective in mind. That is to get a big win early against a team that is going to look good on their resume, because Ohio's got the same thing. I guarantee you Belmont's going to be within 50 to 75 in net ranking this year. And a win against Belmont is going to be a quad one win for them, even though the game is at home. So there's just as much at stake for them in terms of resume building.
Well, and exactly what you said, there are these teams that they're at the top of their conference. They don't have a lot of tough games within the conference. Mm-hmm.
Slim margin for error.
Exactly. And the fact that it is the first game of the year is a little bittersweet for Belmont too, because it's like,
yeah,
you better just be ready.
There's no right? easing their way into it. Yeah, this is the season. It's a meaningful game already.
Exactly. And I think that will be the benefit of Ohio eventually moving to the Missouri Valley Conference, mm-hmm. that they will have more competition just in conference games. But I mean, Casey even told us they tried to make these games so their team is prepared. They are prepared for later in the season. If you don't play these harder teams and you just sweep the OVC every year, it's not going to get them prepared for what they want to do, is go to the tournament and be able to make a run in the tournament. Earlier in the season, I talked to Moose and he said it was so bittersweet the way that their season ended last year. They wanted to make a tournament run. He said that's the reason a lot of them came back, right? They're coming back for a vengeance. They want to get that win. They want to make a run in the tournament. And I believe that this team can. I think they're like my sleepers this year.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, a team that's sitting right outside the top 25 as well. Yeah. And everything we talked about here, we got to go over with head coach Casey Alexander. We got to talk to him after practice. Here's how that conversation with Coach Alexander sounded.
All right, hanging out here with Coach Casey Alexander for Belmont as the season is about a week or so away. And Coach just got done with practice. I want to go ahead and ask you too. You guys did a lot of work on two-point shooting, contact stuff around the rim. You were one of the best two-point shooting teams in basketball all of last year. I think Grayson as a guard shoots about 70% from twos. Yeah. I think he's the only guard on the top like 25 of players in the country in that stat. What do you guys do in terms of your preparation and the way your offense works to be able to reflect a stat like that?
Yeah, honestly, most of it is shot selection. It's not quite as much performance and delivery around the rim. It's more the product of the shot and the efficiency, you know, of the offense that gets us those shots. But at the same time, you got to work on it. You know, I mean, you're going to put yourself in there, and you know, a guard back cuts and has to play against a post player in the paint. He's got to be comfortable scoring the ball, and you know, so it all kind of works together. But it's also a product of how good our five men have been. Musinski, in particular, you know, a guy that we go to a lot, and he's in the 60s by himself. You know, he gets the lion's share of our 2-point attempts.
Man, that's another thing too. I think in the two games, or overall the season, you guys shot out 60% from two. In the two games, and later in the year without him, you got shot about 44% from two. Having him back, or having him, you know, for the full season, healthy, he wasn't as healthy down the stretch last year. What does that do for you guys, like obviously offensively, and on the defensive end too, having at least a 6'11 anchor back there to help?
Yeah, well, I mean, offensively, regardless of what your playing style is, everything has to work together, mm-hmm. you know. We're talking about two-point percentage, but we've made more threes than any school in the country since we've been Division One, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, but they complement each other. You know, we're so efficient around the rim that we get open threes, you know, and his post presence inside helps us get open threes. Our ability to make threes gets him good looks inside, you know, so that's how that works on that end of the floor. You asked me something about defense, too. We don't get many defensive questions.
I was going to say, yeah, on the defensive side, too, having just a 6'11 anchor
level. He set our shot block, career shot block record as a sophomore, you know, and he's honestly he's not an imposing guy down there, but his length, you know, is really important for us. You know, he blocks a shot at the buzzer, and we beat Murray State on the road last year, you know, for example. So, yeah, it's a great weapon to have back there.
Another thing, too, is obviously a very experienced old team. These guys have logged a ton of minutes together. And one of the things I noticed, you know, in practice today is just the conversation, like the talking that occurs when you guys are playing, when there's a dead ball, even when you're talking, players are talking to each other. I've been to some college basketball practices where you can hear a pin drop when gameplay goes on too. What are like some of the pros of having a team that you've had several years with? They've had several years with each other, and you're not having to like throw new terminology in at the beginning of practices. Or anything like that. What does that kind of experience do for you guys to get ready for a long season?
Yeah, well, the best led teams are always led by the players, you know, and that's what experience gives you. They need a lot less of my voice, and they can coach each other because so many of those guys have been around for a long time. And, you know, I think, you know, we're not about energy and hype and that kind of noise. We want, you know, constructive conversation and constructive communication out here, and I think we've got that kind of team for sure. Belmont's always had those kinds of teams, but this year even more so considering all the experience we have.
And especially on the defensive end, too, the stuff you guys were working on, you know, whether it be near the rim, away from the rim, all the conversation that goes on,
yeah,
and switching. How on the defensive side is that vital in terms of getting them like in a cohesive unit to be able to play defense at a high level?
Talking out responsibilities on the defensive end of the floor is a big part of success, on, you know. And, I mean, it's one thing – everybody has to be able to guard their own man and play team defense, but there's so much technically and strategically involved with the defensive end of the floor for us that that communication is really important, and that's what you heard today. A lot of what we're practicing for today is actually scouting report stuff for Tuesday, and so, you know, getting those things right. And, you know, I would equate it to lining up correctly defensively in a football game. You know, you guys, there's a lot that goes on before the play, you know, and if you're not in the right place when the play starts, you're probably not going to get, you know, get it guarded the way you need to.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, obviously, non-conference play up here. Like, your all season ended without any postseason games, and you went 26-0. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I guess, life in the OVC. But you guys have scheduled really tough in the non-conference. You have the game against Ohio, a team that won an NCAA tournament game. You're going to play Drake, a team that was in the first round of your ESPN events tourney, a team that was in the NCAA tournament last year. Was a lot that goes into that experience in a year like you did last year, where you're so good throughout the entire year and your margin for error is just so slim to the point where one game can keep you from playing.
Yeah, you know what? Truthfully, we've always played a tough schedule. Mm-hmm. And, it wasn't really strategic to go out and try to put a schedule like that together this year. It was the same way we always try to schedule, and it just so happened that the teams we ended up with are all really good. Chattanooga's another one. They're picked to win the SoCon, you know. St. Louis is predicted to be a bubble team, you know, and then that's before you even get to the LSUs and the Alabamas and whoever we can see in Orlando. So, to say the least, it'll be a challenge, you know, and you know, we had a very similar schedule last year, and it was really strange how it all worked out. With COVID, the games that we lost were all the toughest games. You know? So at the end of the year, we had no schedule strength of schedule at all, but it was completely out of our control. We were in the Orlando event last year. It got canceled. We were supposed to go to USC last year. It got canceled. We were supposed to go to Western Kentucky last year. It got canceled. Supposed to go to Duquesne. It got canceled. You know, so we've always played this kind of schedule.
I pride myself on going at least this far in the interview without mentioning anything COVID related. But like, obviously, that just like reminded me of it too. That this year, like, you're not going to have to worry about as many games getting canceled. It was a wreck at the beginning of last year. So many games got canceled. That's got to be easier.
Yeah, there's no guarantee that we're going to have all of our players for every game, but but I'd be really surprised if we have games canceled at this point in time. You know, it's just I just don't see that being part of the mix this year, unless things change. Yeah.
And then, of course, like what lessons do you learn from last year where you might not have finished the way you wanted to? And of course, I go back to the term margin for error, which at this level is unfairly low as it could be at other levels of college basketball. But what lessons can you take from a tough loss against a team that you got that matched up well with you guys, which you're going to see twice again this year, that brings back a lot of players?
Well, I mean, to give them credit, I mean, they're a really good team, and they played great, and they deserve to win the game, you know, and regardless of what our circumstances were. So the lesson there is just that we have control over how things go, you know, especially in our league. Doesn't mean if we show up every game, we're going to win every game. But, you know, we didn't play well. They played well. And that's, you know, that's the lesson that you got to learn there. But, you know, I think it's really easy to look at the last 10 days of the season where we lose 3 out of 5, including the championship game, and feel like, you know, we didn't accomplish what we wanted. And technically, we didn't accomplish what we wanted. But right before that stretch, we set a record for 21 straight wins in a row, which had never been done. We set an OVC record for 30 straight conference wins in a row, you know. So we did some pretty significant things in a really tough year. We just didn't finish the way that we want, which is how you're measured in this game.
Coach, so when you were at the luncheon the other day, you used the one term to describe your team as together.
Yeah.
And you have two freshmen on your team this year. How do you think that Isaiah and Will have, you know, been able to kind of make their way into this group that, for most of them, have already played together?
Yeah, I don't think – an outsider that came to our practice would never know which guys the freshmen are, I don't think, at this point, you know. And the benefit of summer that we have now, where those guys are here for 5, 6, 7 weeks and, you know, and can ingrain themselves into everything that we do, you know, by this time, late fall or early fall, whatever we are, November, you know, it's those guys are ready, and you know, they'll still have a lot to learn, but they're comfortable, and they're just like one of the rest of them.
And comparing this to obviously last season, you guys didn't have a preseason. How much more prepared do you feel for your first game, being able to take the time to get the freshmen acclimated and into your team?
Yeah, there's no comparison. You know, and that was the case for a lot of teams last year. I mean, you look at Jacoby, Frank, and Evan, who were our freshmen last year, and they had no summer. And all of our COVID problems were in the fall, so they hardly had any fall. We started playing games, you know, and practicing basically at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and so you compare that to now, where we've had a long summer and a long fall and return all the experience. You know, it's night and day as far as what we're looking at and our comfort level and how far along we are as far as being ready to play games.
And is there anybody in particular that you think had, like, a really incredible offseason or, like, surprised you when you guys got back here this summer? Are you really, like, just excited to see maybe – just grow in the season,
or? Well, I wouldn't say it's a surprise, but Ben Shepherd was clearly the guy that put on a show. I mean, he was Moose Lettison's. We stat everything from summer all the way till now, and Moose Lettison's scoring because he gets so many opportunities in practice. But Ben was clearly the next best scorer. It wouldn't be surprising if Ben leads us in scoring this season.
They're kind of a dynamic duo. They like having a little fun out there. They're goofy.
Ben's goofy all the time. Yeah. Moose is goofy when it's going his way.
I love it. No, Coach, hey, thanks for having us here today. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
And that was Coach Alexander. Big thanks to him to coming on the coming and talking with us after practice for the big game tonight. Definitely make sure to check that out. And speaking of big games, there's two of them. Champions Classic. We'll break down those matchups coming up next here on Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are back, and tonight, the opening of the college basketball season, Champions Classic, Kansas, Michigan State, followed by Duke, Kentucky, the top 10 matchup, saving the best matchup for last there, of course, as they have to. Welcome back to Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic. My name is Elijah Campbell, along with Kentucky grad Michelle Knezovic, whose team is involved in this game tonight. We're going to get to them here in a bit. But Michelle, we'll go ahead and start off with Kansas-Michigan State. Bill Self, Tom Izzo, these teams obviously have a whole lot of history. Maybe not as much against each other, but they're what you'd consider more of the blue bloods of college basketball. Big one tonight, Kansas favored by 4.5. No Jalen Wilson, suspended the first four games of the season due to a DUI. But Kansas really did well in the transfer market. Michigan State had one of their best recruiting circuits in a long time, despite some heavy losses. Where are you leaning on this matchup initially?
You know, I think going into this matchup, people have Kansas as the favorite. You just said that they are the favorite in, on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Something interesting to me, this is Tom Izzo's first season he hasn't been ranked since 2011-2012.
It's weird.
Isn't it weird? I saw that and I was like, huh, that's interesting. Michigan State is always up there. They're always with the Blue Bloods. You know what I mean? But I really think that this game is anyone's. Like you said, Kansas has one of their more significant players out due to a DUI. He's suspended for a couple games this season. And although Michigan State's not ranked, I don't really think that means anything.
Mm-mm. Not at this
point
in the season.
All of these rankings and these preseasons, we haven't seen these teams play since March, April, some December. So going into this, I really don't know. I think it's anybody's game, and I hope that they're both really good games, because I would love to see Michigan State win not ranked, and then it makes it fun, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like I'm not really leaning either way. To be honest, I feel like this game for me has a big question mark over it, and I'm not really sure what I'm going to see from each team, and I'm really unsure what I'm going to see from Michigan. yeah. to be completely honest. Like, we were looking at these games and I was looking at the matchup and I was like, I honestly don't know. And that's, mm-hmm. I think, part of the fun of the Champions Classic is you have all this hype and it's like, well, this team's ranked and this team's got the better recruiting class and they've got 4 or 5 stars and they've got 3 grad transfers and all this stuff. And they definitely are the better team and X, Y, and Z. And they did this last season. You could say all this. Mm-hmm. They can be on paper the perfect team.
Right.
They can have everybody returning. They can have 5 5-star recruits, yada, yada, all this stuff. But none of it really matters until we see them play for the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, this is going to be like at least the base. See them tonight, then moving forward, it's like, okay, this is what that team's about. This is what they're good at. You know, this is kind of how they're rolling their offense. Big question mark.
Yeah.
No, doesn't help. What about you?
See, I'm feeling the under tonight. Like okay. Something about the mixture of these teams with, like what you said, all of the roster mixing. Like Michigan State had some pretty significant losses from the team last year. Aaron Henry led the team in usage rate. The guy who was there forever. Now, obviously, gone, not coming back. Josh Langford's not coming back. Rocket Watts lost in the transfer portal. He's going to Mississippi State. That's a lot of offensive production. I mean, the leading scorer coming back is Joey Hauser. I almost called him Sam Hauser. That's his twin brother. But Joey Hauser, he's back. They had a pretty good recruiting class and a lot of guards, especially, you know, Max Christie, highly touted recruit. He was the number one shooting guard in the country. You can imagine he's probably going to start, even though Tom Izzo isn't really one of these start one-and-dones. I mean, he had Jaren Jackson Jr. as a one-and-done on his team, and Jaren Jackson Jr. played like 17 to 20 minutes a game. I mean, didn't see the floor as much, which is insane. It's a very Tom Izzo thing.
It's just so different, and that's why I love college basketball, because there's not one way.
Mm-mm. Yeah, there's a ton of different ways to do it. And, of course, they got a very impactful transfer, too. And that's a guy to watch tonight, is to see how involved Tyson Walker is in the offense. A transfer from Northeastern, he was an all-CAA player, was the CAA defensive player of the year. I have DPOY written down on my sheet here. But, I mean, he's a really good scorer. Had one of the heaviest workloads in terms of shot volume and just percentage of the offense in college basketball last year at Northeastern. He's probably going to play a pretty pivotal role, whether it be starting or coming off the bench. We're going to see exactly what he's got tonight. But I still kind of got to lean Kansas just because in these games, I love Bill Self. The loss of Jalen Wilson's huge. But this is going to be a Remy Martin game. Speaking of impact transfers, one of the more coveted ones on the transfer market was Arizona State's Remy Martin, a guy who I felt was at Arizona State for years. Had a little bit of a disappointing year last year. The team wasn't very good, but he's going to be surrounded with pretty good talent. A decent recruiting class. Kansas is the number 11 recruiting class in the country, but they still get Ochai Ajabi back, Agbaji back, and David McCormick, who, if we have just anything I've learned about Bill Self offenses, they revolve around the center. Udoka Azubuike from a couple of years ago was one of the best big men in college basketball. I mean, you saw it with Cole Aldrich, made Cole Aldrich an NBA draft prospect. I mean, there's a lot of offenses that Bill Self has had that have revolved around 4 out, one big man posting up and playing around him. And David McCormick's going to play that role this year. I thought he had a fantastic year last year. I really like what he's got to offer. I don't know if Michigan State is able to offer much down low outside of Gabe Brown. If Gabe Brown gets in foul trouble, we're looking at a very interesting game where Kansas can probably win by 10. But like you said, we don't ever know.
Let's
I'm leaning
get
Kansas.
The foul trouble, guys. Come on, let's not.
Yep. And of course, like, I mean, November basketball, it's sloppy. None of this
I
mess
know,
gets pretty.
It is sloppy.
Yeah.
That is like the one thing I don't think I'm prepared for is some sloppy basketball, some fouls, some mm-hmm. just what are you doing, dudes?
There's going to be a lot of that.
What are you doing?
Uh-huh. A ton of that. And there's going to be a ton of that in Duke, Kentucky, too. So I guess I'm going to lean Kansas for the first game. But Duke, Kentucky, I feel like you can just guess. And we will have the same amount of chances of getting it right. I know, Kentucky grad, Kentucky basketball homer. Of the show.
I am such a homer.
So I assume, and you said on Robbie and Rex Road too, you think Kentucky can win by up to what, 20 points? Did you say 20
right,
or did you say 10?
Let's run it back a little bit.
Okay, we'll run it back.
if people aren't familiar, on the morning show, Robbie and Rex Road, every Friday, we do a segment called Call Your Shot Friday, uh-huh. where we make bold predictions in the sports world. So about 2 weeks ago, I was feeling hot. I was spicy. I was feeling good. I was like, Kentucky's going to beat Duke by 20 points.
Woo, shooting from the hip.
Oh, yeah. Just manifesting it.
Uh-huh.
So that, I don't think that's going to happen, but that's like my bold prediction of like, I'm going to shoot for the stars. What if this did happen? I don't know. If it does, then I'm a genius. And if it doesn't.
Makes you look smart. Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then I kind of knew that it probably wasn't going to happen. But moving to that game, because I'm not biased or anything, but we know. I will say it's very frustrating that it is at 8:30 at night, because that is just way too late.
Not great for morning radio.
Exactly. You know, I'll be watching it. So when looking up these two games, I was, you know, just like reading up about against the matchup. Obviously, these two programs have traditionally played each other in this tournament every year. It's always Coach K versus Coach Cal, right? Who's got the better team, the better blue blood, yada, yada, whatever. I pulled up this CBS Sports article on the team, and I want you to listen to this really quick. Mm-hmm. The programs also enter, this is Duke, Kentucky, obviously. The programs also enter Tuesday night with an uncommon urgency and a desire to prove something that's usually not evident in the first game of the season. Duke is coming off its first non-NCAA tournament season since 94-95. The Blue Devils weren't even in the NIT. For Kentucky, even worse, a 9-16 showing a season ago amounted to the worst winning percentage of the Big Blue since 1926-27.
Yikes.
Now, obviously,
before the Depression.
That was the Depression for Kentucky basketball fans last season. Obviously, big changes in the offseason, specifically talking about Kentucky. Big coaching changes. Mm-hmm. Bring in Coleman, you bring in Orlando Antigua, Joe Justice leaves. Cal brings in a lot of veteran guys. And this is the first season for Kentucky in a very long time, at least six years since my senior in high school, when I really, really started following them, that they haven't been starting four freshmen and sophomore. This is rare, you know, usually this first game of the year. And I think that's why I'm so curious to see how we do play, because this is the first time in a while that Kentucky's actually playing with a significantly veteran team. You know, you've got a couple fifth years, you've got some sophomores, really only 2-3 freshmen who are going to see playing time.
Yeah, which is and so rare.
The only thing I could like parallel it to, I guess, was that would have been the 2019 season. You had Tyler Hero, who was a freshman. You had PJ Washington coming back for his sophomore year. He had a great sophomore year. You had Emmanuel Quickly came back for his sophomore year. Nick Richards was junior or senior. So that was really the most recent veteran team, I guess you could say. And then within the last couple of years, they've been adding, you know, one grad transfer. You had Reed Travis a couple of years ago from Stanford. You had Nate Sestina from Bucknell, who you can tell that those guys help, but it was like them playing with a bunch of freshmen.
They weren't focal points of the team, like some of the transfers this year are going to be. Yeah.
Whereas this year, this is completely out of territory for Kentucky. You just haven't seen a team like this in a while. It's very intriguing to see how they play. Cal hasn't had to do basketball 101 transition from high school to college. You know what I mean? So I think we're going to already be seeing this team above previous teams, just in the sense of basketball IQ, not making stupid mistakes out there, feeling comfortable on the court, and things like that.
Yeah, and the rare top 30 recruit in Keon Brooks, who stays for 3 years. Sometimes they stay for an extra one. Not many stay for three, but there's a lot of players on this Kentucky team that I'm incredibly excited to watch.
He also had a significant body transformation. They posted a picture of him from his freshman year till now. He must have gained 25 pounds
wow.
in muscle. He completely was like, you know, freshman college, skinny, thick, skinny, lanky, traditional high school basketball player who really gained muscle and really, he didn't have a chance to play a lot last year because he was hurt on and off, but I think he's definitely going to be a role player this year. Also very vocal, very much a team leader too for all of them.
Speaking of scary looking bodies, Oscar Tshiebwe, that's a big man. And that might be the most impactful transfer in the SEC this year, along with Sevier Wheeler, who transferred from Georgia, was the SEC leader in assists last year. I can imagine him either being the starting point guard or coming off the bench as a sixth man. And then, of course, Kellen Grady, who was one of the best scorers in all the Atlantic 10, probably the best scorer at Davidson since Steph Curry was there. All three of those guys.
Steph Curry, he's not too bad.
Yeah, he's not too bad. He only put up 50 last night against Atlanta. But, I mean, like that, and that's not even including C.J. Frederick, who was the hottest three-point shooting player coming into the transfer portal. He shot almost 50% from three last year on decent volume. It's not mind-blowing volume. So, obviously, that number is probably going to go down. He's probably somewhere in between about a 40-43% three-point shooter. But that's a lights-out three-point shooter that you're going to need to win college basketball games with.
Yes.
That's a pretty impactful transfer as well. So that's why tonight I want to give Kentucky the edge. I'm excited to see how Paolo Banchero looks, the Duke's number one recruit. I think he's number four recruit in the country, a guy who NBA mock draft Twitter loves. I mean, this guy is getting a lot of love as potentially the number one pick in the NBA draft. I mean, we might see some NBA teams tank for this guy right here. He'll be the best player on the floor more than likely tonight. The biggest question is how much they're going to get out of everybody else. I don't know about A.J. Griffith, his health and availability. I know he got hurt several weeks ago, and he was on a 4 to 6 week timetable in terms of returning to action. How well is the experienced players going to do? I know Wendell Moore coming back for a third year was big for Duke. They desperately needed that. This team does have a really good mix of age, experience, and then some blue chip talent as well. I still just like Kentucky's roster 1 to 10 better, and that's why I want to give them a little bit of an edge. It's just going to be dependent on how
Elijah's unbiased.
Yeah, exactly.
So even though we very much stated that I'm a homer Kentucky fan and I will always have confidence in my team, Elijah's giving you more of a...
That's right. That's as closely and then analytically I can look at it. And even though I grew up a Kentucky hater, my hatred for Kentucky basketball has curved once I started covering the sport a little bit, just because I got to finally cover a game at Rupp a couple of years ago before the pandemic, and it changed my life. That place is so bleeping cool.
We didn't even mention that this is Coach K's last season. This could potentially be the last time Coach K and Coach Calipari play each other.
More than likely. More than likely, it will be the last time, unless they do play. If they play in a Final Four, that'd be pretty sweet. To see those
you see my eyes
mash up. Yeah. Seeing those programs mash up in a Final Four would be incredible.
47th season. It's incredible.
That's a lot of basketball. That man has seen a lot of basketball in his day. And before we head out here, we'll go ahead and tease the next episode of Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic. We'll be breaking down Vanderbilt real quick. What are you looking for in Vanderbilt this year? Their first game is tomorrow night against Alabama State at Memorial Gym. What are you looking for?
Elijah, I got to go to a couple of Vanderbilt practices these last 2 weeks. I didn't get to go this week because we were focusing more on Belmont. But these last 2 weeks, I saw them in practice. I saw them at a pro day. Younger team, you know, and Liam, their big guy, has had a significant injury. Today, Jerry Stackhouse, the Vanderbilt head coach, said that he's out indefinitely for now. Mm-hmm. So Quinton, who's the younger big guy on the team, is really going to have to step up, you know, and there's nobody really else of equivalent size to Liam on the team that Quinton can go up against in practice. So I'm not sure how that's going to work on the court going up against, you know, some guys who are more at Liam's caliber, 6'5", 250, just like a traditional five guy. So I definitely think that is going to be a problem. They're really going to have to work on shooting from the perimeter. I did see Scottie Pippen, though. Obviously, he's preseason SEC Player of the Year on the watch list. He looked great. He looked really, really good. in the NBA Pro Day. They had all the scouts there a couple weeks ago, and they did the two minutes and 30 second shooting drill where they shoot essentially threes from around the perimeter, all different size. They cross through the other hoop and they do layups, yada, yada, all that stuff. He looked really good. Really good. You know, his endurance running up and down the court didn't even look winded. Every other player was, you know, pretty tired after that, running up and down the court, quick releases, you know, very great ball handling. And then when he was scrimmaging, just a really good facilitator, you know, driving to the rim, no look pass, points in the paint, things like that. Can really anticipate where his teammates are going to be. Feels very confident at the one. You can tell he has a leadership role. Jerry Stackhouse had, they were scrimmaging the other day. It was like black, white. They had the other team like double teaming him just so, you know, he could be prepared for, because that's what people are going to do, you know?
Yep.
All the eyes are on him. When people are scouting Vanderbilt, they're going to look at him, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to try to affect him. They're going to try to get him frazzled. But he looks pretty calm in those situations. You know, he was able to get himself out. He was able to get the ball out. Really excited to see him and how he performs this year. Not sure all the pieces he has around him. Obviously, with Liam out, that's really going to hurt the team. Gabe Dorsey is a freshman coming in who I'm really, really excited to see. He was somebody else who stood out to me during the pro day. He's a lefty, really good three-point shooter, really good quick release. And even though he's a freshman, he looked really confident out there. I mean, I know this was just practicing and scrimmaging, and it's going to be different once we actually see them on the court. But I think he's definitely going to get some playing time. Looked really confident out there in their schemes. Good three-point shot. I could definitely see him playing a decent amount for Vanderbilt this season.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is he going to be enough to help Scottie Pippen Jr. in these times? Yeah, because, I mean, there wasn't a player in college basketball that I felt had a bigger percentage of the workload for their team than Scottie Pippen Jr. did for that Vanderbilt team. And, I mean, you get someone like Liam Robbins, which is a huge scorer in the transfer market from Minnesota, an incredibly skilled big man who's going to come in, play the Dylan Dessou role, who you lost at the back end of last year because of an injury, and then lost in the transfer portal as he went to Texas. Those are some big shoes to fill, and if you don't have that, it's going to be tough during the non-conference season while you have them. We'll see about Liam Robbins' availability later on in the year, but the main thing I'll be watching for, especially in the game tomorrow night against Alabama State, is who's going to get the second highest percentage of shots for this Vanderbilt team, because you know Scottie Pippen Jr. is going to get his. How is that going to get worked into the game plan? How are the shots going to be distributed for the role players? It's going to be a lot of role players, a lot of guys that have to play vitally important, specific roles, like you mentioned earlier. But we'll get into more of that next week. Michelle, good luck to you and your Kentucky Wildcats tonight. Game starts only here in a couple of hours, and college basketball officially underway here on episode 2 of Courtside with Cam Lukanezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.